Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me on a special edition on a new day and time of Hashtag No Limits. Hashtag No Limits is about people whose society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, "We know who we are, but not who we will become." And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, and then it reforms into a butterfly. As if that's not difficult and enough, it also then has to struggle to get out of the cocoon in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly. And while busting through all of that is not easy, neither is busting through the limits that society places upon us. And today, I am so grateful and so honored to have Dr. Temple Grandin with me today. I have been so profoundly impacted by her life, by her message, and by all that she does. And I can't wait to get into the interview. It's making me tear up, but I do want to take just a couple of seconds and acknowledge that today in the United States is Memorial Day. And that is the day that we take a moment and we remember all those who have given their lives as military members to defend our country. So if we could just have just a couple seconds of silence. Thank you very much. My family are big military people, and I am a huge respecter of all of our military. So Dr. Grandin, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Good. And what's you're out in Colorado, is that correct?
Fort Collins, Colorado, Colorado State University, where I'm a professor.
Yes. And so how's your weather today? Is it a good day to have barbecues and all that?
Well, sunny day. It's actually been kind of cooler than normal the last few days. Getting a little bit of rain, and we really need the rain.
Oh, well, I'm in Southern Illinois, and we've almost had too much rain lately. We've had many downpours in the last couple of weeks, and I'm glad we have a break today. The weather is beautiful. The sun is shining. It's a great day to remember those who have given their life. So I want to ask you, I know what I think about you, and many people have their opinions of you, but who is Temple Grandin to you? When somebody asks you that question,
there's a lot of interest in identity. And for example, being autistic is part of who I am, but it's never been my primary identity. I think my primary identity is basically what I do. I am what I do. I said that in my publications quite a few years ago. That's where I get meaning in life. Now I'm way past retirement age. And I think what am I supposed to be doing now? I want to encourage the kids that are different to get out there and get into a successful career where they can do something positive. That's the big thing I'm working on right now. I want to encourage the next generation. And we need to have people who can actually do things, not just talk about them, do them.
Tell me a little bit more about that. What do you mean by do them versus just talk about them?
Well, I've spent years designing facilities. And when I started out in the cattle industry, in my early 20s, I'll tell you right now, being a woman was a much bigger barrier than autism ever was. But what I learned to do is I learned to sell my work rather than myself. I would simply show people my drawings. And when people saw my drawings, they kind of went, "Wow, you made that?" In fact, I'm just going to find the book here where I could show you some of my drawings. When you're different, one of the things I learned was to simply show off my work. And this has been shown so many times on these shows that the book's falling apart in my book, Thinking in Pictures, is I would just show people my work. And so when you design things, okay, I build a cattle handling facility. I've got to, sell that job, design it, supervise the construction, and then start it up and make it work. You actually get something real done. It's not just talked about. You get right. It done.
Yeah. Awesome. So thank you for that. That was a very interesting statement, that being a woman in the cattle industry was a much bigger barrier to bust through than any time you've ever busted through a limit because of your autism. And that's one of the areas, as a woman myself, that I'm so grateful because you have just taken over in an industry that is has been male dominated for years, and I'm guessing still pretty much is. I'm thinking you're still pretty much an anomaly as a female in that industry.
Well, there's getting to be a lot more. Like when I went into animal science, you know, back in the early 70s, there were very few women. Now there's a lot of women not going to industry. I have one student who is running quality assurance at a major beef plant. That would not have been going on, you know, almost 50 years ago when I first started.
Right. So one of the reasons that I have had you on the show, of course, is the cattle industry and what you're doing there, but also the autism. I'm a former special education teacher, and I'm curious, what was it like growing up? Because you didn't get into the cattle industry until you were an adult. So you've had autism your whole life, though. What was that like growing up?
Well, I had, fortunately, a good childhood. I went to a very small elementary school where the Mrs. Deitch, the third grade teacher, explained that the kids that had a handicap that wasn't visible, like a wheelchair. And then, so I managed to get through elementary school without being bullied. And of course, I was brought up in the 50s. Kids were taught social rules. You played games outside. Kids aren't playing outside and making up their own games anymore. And, you know, I was out doing all of those things. High school was horrible. Teasing, bullying. I got kicked out of a regular high school, got sent to a special boarding school, still got bullied and teased there. And the only place I was not bullied and teased was friends through shared interests. And that was horses, model rockets, and electronics lab. The students that were interested in those activities were not the bullies.
Right. So I think I know the answer to this question based on what you just said, but you said in an interview with Dr. Tony Atwood in 1999 that you got in trouble a lot in school. And your mom would tell you, you wouldn't get to watch Howdy Doody. And then when you got older, you were take your horse riding privileges were taken away. So
well, this
what
was for,
got you kicked out of your regular high school and sent off to the boarding school? What were those behaviors?
Temper tantrums. I mean, now it's called meltdowns. And if I had one either at home, and when I was a little kid in elementary school, or I had one at the school, the teacher would call my mother, and the rule was no howdy doody for one night. And then I got kicked out of ninth grade for throwing a book at a girl who called me a retard. And at the boarding school, I got in a gigantic fist fight in the cafeteria, and they took horseback riding away for 2 weeks. And
oh, wow.
I switched from anger to crying. I don't know really how I did it, but you don't get in trouble for crying.
Right.
And anger just gets you in all kinds of trouble.
Right.
And the bullying still went on. I'm just thinking of what would have happened to me with social media, getting bullied online. What would happen if I was out riding my horse in high school and I'd be texted, called names. See, at least when I was doing those activities like riding, the bullies were not there.
Right. Yeah, and I was curious, that was something I wanted to ask you about, was how, what do you think about the social media today, and how has it been a positive thing, but also how can it, or how has it been a detrimental thing?
Well, it's definitely, you know, easier to bully people online, and they can't get away from it. The positive thing is enabling people with shared interests to get together and do things. So there's definitely positive things, and there's so much good educational materials out online that are absolutely wonderful. But also the problem with some of the stuff online is it can get into really radical stuff.
Yeah.
And when I was a young kid, I wasn't exposed to TV shows and things with all the cruelty and nastiness that we've got now.
Right.
There were very clear values about, you know, good and bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. I don't think those lines are so clear right now. I do want to go back, though, because we were talking about what got you kicked out of the school. And I read a story once about those fights that you got into. Those weren't just with girls, if I'm remembering correctly.
No, I got into some fights with boys, too. And so I had to do is switch anger to crying. But then what motivated me to prove to the cattle industry that I could do stuff? A big motivation I had when I was in my 20s, when I designed those dipping vat projects that were shown in the HBO movie Temple Grandin, was I wanted to prove to people I was not stupid. Mm-hmm. And I went to a very, very interesting meeting for at-risk youth. And the grandson of Gandhi was one of the speakers. And he talked about kind of a controlled anger that's like electricity. And you can use electricity to power your house, or you can use lightning can just burn stuff up. And this sort of, I'm going to prove to him I'm not stupid. That was probably the control, almost anger, that Gandhi's grandson talked about.
Right.
That's a very interesting concept. And unfortunately, his analogy to electricity is not in his book. It was during the talk he said that. I had this very strong, I'm going to prove I'm not stupid. I'm going to prove I can do it.
Yeah. And do you think that that comes from your dad? Because I remember you said, I think it was in The Way I See It. It might have been Thinking in Pictures. I've read so many of your books, I get confused as to what comes out of what book. But where you said that your dad had a temper.
Yeah, he did.
So do you think that some of that drive to prove I can do this comes from that place of temper in the body? And the reason I ask is because I have this.
I think it's more likely to come from my grandfather, engineer. My grandfather was the co-inventor of the autopilot for airplanes. MIT-trained engineer, worked with another guy who was probably autistic. Grandfather was the traditional mathematically trained engineer, and Haig Andronikian came up with a wild idea for making an autopilot. It was totally different. And they tinkered for years in the loft over a place where they fixed trains. Yeah. I mean, that's persistence. And when I was a very young child, I used to ask constant science questions to my grandfather, like, why is the sky blue? And he would explain those things to me. And that was drive. They worked for years, and they finally got the autopilot to work. And unfortunately, it was stolen.
Oh.
And the copy appeared in every warplane during World War II.
Oh, wow.
It was a major invention.
Yeah, well, certainly. And it's definitely, a lifesaver in a lot of instances today. So that's interesting. The reason I asked that question, I don't know if you were able to hear me say it, but that I have that drive, especially if someone tells me I'm not going to be able to do something or I won't be able to do something. That drives me. And if they're sincere, that drives me to prove them wrong.
Well, those are big. I'm sorry about interrupting. This is a problem that I still have. I got a very slow processor speed.
That's
if I was a computer, I'd be an Intel 286, but I've got the cloud for memory. And I have a hard time getting the timing right. I still do.
Yeah, no, that's perfectly fine. This is your interview. So you tell me, you talk to me when you want to talk to me. And yeah, I find that it comes from my mom has it too. We both just have that drive and I don't know exactly where it comes from. So I was just curious.
Well, people have asked me what motivates you. And and then of course COVID was hard. All of my stuff was canceled. All my speaking engagements were canceled.
Right.
Some stuff went on Zoom. And one thing that helped was to get up every morning, get dressed. And then, of course, I have a COVID project. So my COVID project is this new book on visual thinking.
Ah.
Because the big thing that I'm working on now is the different kinds of minds. Now, it's on pre-order. And unfortunately, it won't come out until October because there's a paper shortage and supply chain problems printing right now. But I do have this galley proof, and you can pre-order it. And one of the big things we discuss in this is that I am a visual thinker, and we discuss a lot of the research. And some of that research is also discussed in the autistic brain, that I'm an object visualizer. That helped me in my animal behavior work. That helped me in my designing work. And then other kinds of thinkers are mathematical minds. And then you've got people who are word thinkers. So, of course, my co-author on this book, Betsy Lerner, is wait a minute, I put the wrong book up here. I put Navigating Autism up. I meant to put up Visual Thinking.
Okay.
That's the book I should have put up here. Visual Thinking right here. Put the wrong book up there. But there are different kinds of minds, and they have complementary skills. And I'm concerned some of the kids think the way I do because they're not very good at higher math, they're getting screened out. But we need my kind of mind to do a lot of what I call clever engineering. All of the things I did in cattle handling facilities would be in that category, where you just figure out how to design things. I worked with brilliant designers on some of my equipment. that were designing machinery. They might have 20 patents, owning big shops, and they were on the autism spectrum, right, undiagnosed. Well, the problem is these people are not getting replaced, and we need them really, really badly. And so now, way past retirement age, I want to see the kids that are different, getting out, doing things. I think taking hands-on classes out of the schools is the worst thing they ever did. We're paying right now for taking shop class out 20 years ago, paying for it right now.
Yeah.
Now that COVID's winding down, I've gotten back into the beef plants, been out for 2 years because of COVID. I'm finding that they're losing the ability just to make things in-house because the old shop guy they had is retiring.
Okay. Yeah. And you've said so much in there that kind of covers a lot of the things that I was going to ask you, but I'm going to kind of go back a little bit. So the type of thinkers, I was hoping that you would bring that up and that you could elaborate, and you did bring that up. So can you elaborate more on what you mean when you say a visual thinker or a mathematical thinker?
A visual thinker that I talk about in this book, visual thinking, is a person that's called an object visualizer, thinks completely in photographically realistic pictures. And the HBO movie Temple Grandin shows exactly how I think. Thinks in photographically realistic pictures. Then you have the visual spatial, more mathematical thinker who thinks in patterns. I think in like photorealistic pictures. This other person thinks in patterns. And then you have people that are verbal thinkers, that are completely verbal thinkers who think in words. Now, when I first started out in the work in cattle handling, it was obvious to me to look at what cattle were seeing when they went through a chute. And I couldn't understand why other people didn't think of that. But I didn't know at the time that many other people think in words. I just didn't know that.
Right. So,
And the first step is realizing different thinking exists. And let's take, building a big, like, beef plant, for example. My kind of mind, and I worked with plenty of them, back 20, 30 years ago, that had their own shops. They designed all kinds of equipment. They do what I call the clever engineering department. Think, you go on the cut floor, all that elaborate equipment. That's usually not designed by the degreed engineers. The degreed engineer will do the refrigeration system, the boilers, make sure the roof doesn't fall down, power and water requirements. Well, there's kind of two parts here of engineering. And what we're losing is what I call a clever engineering department. Like if you want a poultry plant right now, you're going to import that equipment in 100 shipping containers from Holland. That's because they kept their shop classes and their tech classes.
Right.
In the high schools.
Yeah. And so just so I kind of understand this a little bit, and I know that it's in the movie, but for the people who are watching who haven't seen the movie or maybe don't have access to the movie, when you say you have photorealistic thinking, you literally see pictures, and then someone who is a mathematical visual spatial can sort of pick out the patterns.
They see the patterns. That's what I mean.
Yeah. And then somebody who's words, like when they're thinking, they just see or think about.
They hear the words. They just have the words.
Right.
And so like I was talking about trip to went to meat plant just 2 days ago, and I'm seeing now some of the cattle that were there. You see, I can kind of play back tapes, and I tend to play back things I paid attention to. One of the weird things that was in that plant is they had shade cloth over their facility, and the seams in the shade cloth, and then a place where the shade cloth had been patched, made really weird shadows in their lead-up chute. And where the patch was on the shade cloth looked like one of those little flags that you use for moving cattle with.
Okay.
And it was right in their lead-up chute. Okay, now as I talk about that, I'm seeing, and of course I whipped out my phone and I took a picture of it.
So is that, first of all, there's two parts here. I want to continue to talk about the thinking, but when you talk about that with the animals, is that distracting to them? Does it make them nervous? Yes.
Yes, it messes up cattle handling. It definitely messes up cattle handling. They sharp shadows. In fact, my student, Dennis Wilson, he's now working as an animal welfare auditor, did a study at a plant, and when the sun was making really sharp shadows, there was more problems with cattle balking, refusing to move. When there was a noisy rendering truck parked next to it, that caused problems with cattle handling. You know, you have an old dairy cow, she'll walk over the shadow going to the milking parlor. The new heifer is going to stop at it. But these things, see, when I first started out, nobody thought about looking at what cattle were seeing.
Right.
You see, and that's why is the problem.
Sorry. I'm excited. Why is that important for like the average person watching today to be concerned about how the cattle are treated, what they see, how they're reacting, what happens to them as they go through to be slaughtered? Why are all those things important?
Well, first of all, cattle feel fear. They feel pain. And there's a lot of interest now in low stress cattle handling. It's a lot safer to handle cattle when they're not excited. You get better meat quality. If out on a ranch and cattle are treated roughly, they can be more likely to get sick. So there's really good reasons, you know, economic reasons too, for handling animals in a calm, a quiet manner. But, and things have gotten a lot better on the handling. But when I first started out in the 70s, cattle handling was really, truly terrible. But I saw it as a solvable problem because there were a few ranchers and a few places to actually handle cattle decently and right. So I could see some sort of light at the end of the tunnel. I kind of saw it as a solvable problem. I was always trying to find, you know, practical ways to fix things. That's what I was trying to do.
Yeah. And I so appreciate that about you, because there are so many times when things could be fixed a whole lot easier if someone like yourself, I think, was in charge of the fixing it. And I think I read somewhere, I don't remember if it was an article or if it was in one of your books, but talking about the kinds of thinkers that, and I think it was the visual, not the visual, it was the word thinkers that will say things like, we need to have inclusive classrooms, but they don't have any idea what that looks like or how to make it.
They don't know how to implement it. You see, a verbal thinker is much more organized. In fact, when I worked on this book on visual thinking, this was the big COVID project. Mm-hmm. Betsy, my co-author, is very much a verbal thinker. So I'd write the initial drafts, and then she would, boy, would she organize things. You know, much more organized, much more linear. But in order to be more linear in how you think, you have to drop out detail. The verbal thinker overgeneralizes. Okay, I tend to have too many details, but then I learn in food safety a thing called the critical control points in food safety. And I can't do 100 micro tests every day out on a beef processing floor. So what has to be done is to figure out where are the critical control points, the most important places to do them. In other words, what are the most important details? I love that concept because that's exactly how I think. And I developed the beef quality assurance handling scoring. It originated from the work I did for the meat industry on the American Meat Institute, which is now North American Meat Institute. Scoring system. And I go, what are 5 simple things I can measure to evaluate a slaughterhouse? Stunning, dead on the rail, electric produce falling down, and cattle bellowing during handling. Those are very simple outcome measures. And if a plant gets good scores on that, they're probably going to have pretty good treatment of animals. Simple things I can measure.
Right.
I always try to think simple. What are simple ways that I can measure?
Yeah. And what you said about having the very important details, I think my husband would agree that I am a verbal, I keep doing that, a word thinker, because I tell probably more details. He often tells me, just give me the things that I really need to know. But then when I try to do that, I leave out things. And he's like, well, you didn't tell me that part.
Well, the thing is figuring out what's important. Like yesterday, I had a very interesting talk with a lady about the thing called the Davis method in autism. Well, I started out with all this vague stuff, and I finally figured out, it had a very interesting concept. You take concepts like sequence and respect and responsibility and time, And what they did is made a little clay model for each thing. But then, okay, like change. How do you teach the concept of change? Well, like a plant growing, for example, would be change. In other words, making a concrete example for each one of these concepts. For me, responsibility, when I was a teenager, I took care of the horses. You make sure the grain box lid is locked, closed and locked. I was very
careful. Because what happens if
that.
It's not?
I knew that could be a dead horse if I failed to close that lid and lock it. To me, that's, you see, that's an example of thinking in pictures. That's responsibility.
Right.
Make sure that you feed the horses the correct amount of grain and then close and lock the grain box.
Right. One of the things that you have said that I really appreciate is that when you are trying to transition from something to another thing, I want to get it right. And I wrote it down. Walking through doors is a way to transition from one phase to another, no matter how difficult the transition or how debilitatingly anxious you felt. You picture a door.
Yes, I do.
That you walk through.
That's right. That's what I did. I don't do, I still kind of do that because I have to have a picture. So when I'm really young, I didn't have a whole library worth of information where I can use my own Google for images search engine right. inside my head to search. I didn't have that many images. So right. to understand a concept like, graduating from high school and going on into the future, I thought I had an actual little door I walked through. You see, because without having something to visualize, I sort of almost didn't understand it.
Right. Do you think that a lot of people with autism are more visual thinkers like yourself?
There's a portion of them. When I first wrote Thinking in Pictures, I made the mistake of thinking everybody was in the autism spectrum was a visual thinker. And that book came out in 1995. And then Amazon came on the scene. I got some reviews on Amazon and people said, well, that's just simply not true. So then I started really looking into things and I found that there's three kinds. There's my visual kind of thinking, the more mathematical pattern thinker. And then there's the word thinker type that will know every statistic about baseball or movie stars or some other thing like that that they are interested in. And there's now scientific research that shows that these different thinking styles exist. And I'm the object visualizer. The early science is described in here. And this book's going to have all of the more science. And the different kinds of minds have different complementary skills. But one of the problems my mind has is I cannot do algebra. Never have passed an algebra class. I got out of it in high school. I failed the entrance exams. I got into a small startup college. And thank goodness the freshman math class was not algebra. A lot of tutoring, got through that. Tutor, and got through statistics with a C as in Charlie. But what I found, I'll go back on all the construction projects I've worked on. I've worked in all the major meat companies, every single one of them. Been in all the plants. And as we were working on this book, I went back through all the jobs to see how the engineering work was divided up. And what I've found is that my kind of thinker, usually may own a big shop, may barely graduate from high school, took a welding class. He might have a guy, very autistic, 20 patents. But these people are all retiring now. And then the degreed engineers, we never touch boilers and refrigeration. Ammonia refrigeration, that's for degreed engineers to mess with. You see, but the thing is, you need both kinds of minds. And what's happening as the people I've worked with are retiring out, they're not getting replaced because the kid that ought to be building some stuff for me now in a meat plant is playing video games in the basement. Because let's look at the jobs for the different minds. My kind of mind is going to be art, animals, photography, and mechanics. Art and mechanics go together.
Seems that sounded strange to me.
Then you have the mathematical minds. That's going to be computer programming, traditional engineering, university-trained engineer, chemistry, physics, those kinds of things. And then you have the word thinker. And one of the jobs the autistic word thinker can be very good at is specialized retail. Like work in a phone store and they can help you pick out the exact right phones for you, not just try to sell you the whole store.
Right.
Because they're detailed knowledge of product. There's been some very successful jobs in selling fancy financial products and in selling cars.
That's interesting. Thank you for giving examples of the kinds, different kinds of jobs. One of the things that I'm wondering is people who, and I know this is generalizing and we can't really do this, but the people who make laws in general, what type of thinker do you believe that they would be?
I think a lot of, well, lawyers would be very verbal, and they will make things that you can't, that aren't clear in enforcement. Because I've written a lot of animal welfare guidelines. You can't just write handle cattle properly. What does that mean?
Right.
No, we had numerical scoring. You do this many more prides on them, you're going to fail the McDonald's audit. You know, you know, it's sort of like traffic laws. The traffic laws are clear. They measure speeding with a device. They can measure drunk driving with a breathalyzer. That's a device. And stop signs mean stop. You see, right. That's an example of clear laws, but a lot of laws are very, very vague. You know, like when they talk about monopolies, they talked about something being commercially reasonable. What does that mean?
Yeah.
You see, it's vague language. You see, right. I like things, you know, I've written a lot of guidelines and I like to write something that's not vague. Like one example I use is for like a pig slaughterhouse is all the pigs have to be able to lay down at the same time without being on top of each other. You see, that's clear.
Right.
And I can also train somebody to audit that.
Yeah.
But you have a lot of very vague things that are written that people, you know, then the Supreme Court argues over what it means.
Right.
They're not going to argue over stop signs meaning stop.
Right. And I wonder, as I said, I'm a former special education teacher, and now I'm an education advocate and consultant, and I work a lot with school districts and families with kids going through the special education process. And one of my biggest things that I try to get school districts to do is to clarify the accommodations and the modifications, and also write clearer goals for the students, because there is so much vague language.
Well, this is the problem. And then I went to this horrible bureaucracy meeting in California. They're talking about writing 35-page long individual educational plans. Well, it ought to fit on a single business letter, as far as I'm concerned. And clear. Okay, Tommy doesn't need some help with reading. This is what we're going to do to help him with reading. Accommodations for sensory. One of the big ones is going to be flickering on LED lights. And I just learned the way to find the bad LED lights. I had a lighting contractor come up to me at a book signing. He whipped out his brand new phone. He says, look, if you take pictures of it in slow motion and play it back in slow motion, you can find the ones that flicker. But that's a very specific accommodation some kids labeled autism and dyslexia are going to need.
Right. And I think that's where a big part of where our downfall of our education system is when it comes to educating our students with special needs, because we want to be very generic so that we're covered by the law, because if we're too specific and we don't do that specific thing every time we're supposed to, then we'll get dinged by the law.
Well, I think what happens, we get more concerned about the law than we do about where is that student 10 years after high school. Okay, well, one of the things that I learned from construction, it's all about finishing jobs. It's making things work.
Yeah.
You got to get jobs done. You got to make this stuff work.
Right. And I got goosebumps, honestly. Did you see that comment? I'm sorry. She said.
Yes, I did. And I.
Okay.
I saw that. And. Well, I think some of it gets down to different ways of thinking. One of the reasons why verbal thinkers overgeneralize, in order to be as organized as they are, they've got to leave out some of the detail.
Yeah. But I truly got goosebumps when you said we focus too much on the law and not about the child that who they will be 10 years after high school.
Well, the other thing I'm seeing with kids with a label, they get way too babied. They aren't learning stuff like shopping, bank account, just basic skills like that.
Yeah.
Getting way too overprotected. The other thing is, since kids aren't doing hands-on things, they aren't learning practical problem solving. I just talked to a girl the other day who got truck scheduling for cattle dumped in her lab. Well, I find out she's only got 10 producers and 7 local trucking companies, and the cattle were showing up at the plant at the wrong time. And some of them were coming in from quite far away. And I said, why don't we just, you have 10 producers. Why don't we just make a list with where they come from, how long the trips are, and maybe we can juggle some of these trips around so that somebody doesn't have to load cattle at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And to me, that's very, very simple. God, she, you know, then the people, as well, she looked like a deer in the headlights. All I wanted, you see, a go-getter would have run in the office, written down where they, there were only 10 of them.
Right.
Where they came in from. And I said, well, all right, now this comes in, it's a 5-hour trip. This is a 2-hour trip, you know, whatever. Maybe we can switch this around because I don't, we want them coming in on the time, but I also don't want them frying a load of cattle at a truck stop in order to come in at the right time. Okay, see, to me, this is a very, very simple thing. And she called us vague, I got to learn about cattle procurement.
Oh.
But I tried to just cut it down to something real simple, like maybe switching the schedule around just a little bit to make it easier for those producers. I don't want to load cattle in the middle of the night. And the truckers don't want to go there in the middle of the night.
Right.
And that might have solved some of the problems.
And what you did just there, I think, is absolutely phenomenal because you were able to see a problem differently and explain it a solution for that problem.
But it seems like, you see, to me, this is so obvious. I would just get a piece of paper and write down where they're coming in from. And I go, well, this is a 5-hour trip. So if they load at this time, they show up at the plant at this time. And then here's one that might be tempted to cook their cattle at a truck stop. So I want to switch him around to get rid of that temptation. And I might have to just, it was only 10 producers. It wasn't
right.
100.
Right.
It's something well, and- just so simple. And you see, when I first started out, I would have gone and written them down.
Right.
And brought them back and said, well, all right, let's just look at, okay, we've got Google Maps out and figured out what their trip lengths are.
Yeah. And when I say different, I mean different than the person who was looking at the problem. So.
Yeah, no, see, I don't think she knew where to start.
Oh.
And even when I just said, well, write them down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, you got 10 different producers. They live different distances away. And these were not just local feed yards. They were some other specialized producers.
Right. Yeah.
Let's just start with writing them down.
Yeah. And see, to you, that is so clear and easy. And to
totally
her,
easy.
It was because it's the different type of thinking, I'm assuming. You know,
well, yeah, and I think when I was younger, I used to call people stupid. And now I don't do that. Now I realize it's different kinds of thinking and the approach to problem solving is differently. Because sometimes I always visualize. I visualize how to do something and it doesn't happen instantaneously. Oftentimes when I'm in the shower or I'm just drifting off to sleep. Oh, I know how to work those really small cattle. We can run them up that chute and just keep them going. They won't have time to turn around.
So we have a comment specifically towards you. Watching your movie allowed me to see the possibilities and a future for my son.
Well,
thank
I
you.
Really appreciate that. No, and the thing is, I did work with a lot of visual thinkers that were very autistic, had taken a welding class in high school, owned large businesses that did metal fabrication, small businesses. And, you know, now what's happening is they're getting addicted to video games in the basement because nobody introduced them to tools. Got kids growing up today that have never used a ruler. I had one in my class.
Really?
Never had measured anything with a ruler. That was last year.
How did they measure things then?
Well, they don't.
Oh, how does that even work? I don't even That doesn't even make sense to me.
This is where this goes back on the educational system. I think taking these things out, I would spend hours tinkering with my little bird kite. So me and Betsy worked on this book right here. It has all my little bird kite parachute projects I made when I was a kid. And I spent hours tinkering with these things to get them to work. Kids just aren't doing that today.
Right. And you mentioned that earlier, and that was something that I wanted to discuss with you. How can we fix this? And why do you think we're too easy? And I think you actually answered this earlier. Do you think we're too easy on kids now?
Well, I'm not going to say that because we're absolutely loading homework on kids. I'm having trouble getting kindergarten kids to read. You know, I was just learning my alphabet and the ABC song when I was in kindergarten. Right. So there's some things we're pushing them more. I think kids are overscheduled. They don't have time to do free play. Kids just aren't out doing things like taking old lumber and go build something with a hammer nails into it. I mean, this is stuff that we did as kids.
Right.
One time I went to a maker fair and they had all of this electronic stuff for kids to play with. You know what the big hit of the maker fair was? Washing machine boxes and cutting them up. I think we need to get more of those kinds of things because, you know, I did sewing. I loved sewing. Mm-hmm. And I remember cutting the fabric wrong on a project, had to throw it out. There's no way to get more fabric. What I learned from that was be more careful next time.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I do, we only have about 18 or 19 minutes at the most left. And so I want to talk to you about, you have been all over the world. Is that correct?
Yep. I've been all over Europe, South America. I've been to China, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, a whole bunch of South America, Central America. I've been to a lot of places.
And so probably for that reason and a myriad of other reasons, you have been named Time Magazine's one of their most influential people. In 2021, you were named one of the top professors in the country. And what do those kinds of accolades mean to you? Or do they mean anything to you?
Well, they do mean something to me. And people ask me, how do you handle all this attention? People come up to me in the airport all the time. And I say, it's a responsibility. I have got to really behave myself because I got kids looking up to me. And I think my job, I'll be 75 this summer. Mm-hmm. And I think my job now is to help influence the kids, maybe especially the different kinds of thinking kids, to grow up and do something positive in the world. Actually do something.
Yeah, not just talk about it, not just play.
Also, you get a lot of people like things get very vague. I remember, I'll never forget an English class I addressed one time. It was one girl once says, I want to work on social justice. Well, that's so vague. Where do you even start?
Right.
So I said, well, what about, I'll think of an example. The people that get the DNA testing to show that this particular guy who's in prison did not do the crime. Mm-hmm. Okay, now that's looking at something much more targeted where you can actually get something done. I worked on cattle handling. That wasn't just every animal issue there ever was.
Right.
It's something a lot more targeted. So you get big, vague things. Well, where do you even start?
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. So I want to share a picture of have had a statue erected on the Colorado State University
That's
campus.
Right.
Again, the question, what does that mean to you?
Well, I got a lot of people looking up to me and I look at it's a responsibility.
Yeah.
It's a responsibility.
And do you feel like it's a good likeness of you?
Yep. That was made by David Anderson. It's a very good likeness and it was based on a picture that was taken of me. And I think he did a great job on it. And I feel it's a responsibility because there's a lot of talented kids out there and I'd like to see them, we need people that can fix things. Okay, we're putting all these solar panels up. I'd like to see sheep grazed under them. I know goats are going to eat the wires and get electrocuted, but sheep will just leave it alone. We need people to fix them. We got solar panels at the airport and all the tilting mechanisms are broken and they're tilted every which way. I see that every time I go into the airport.
And the other thing too with that, I think is, and I think you're hinting at this without saying it, is that we need to learn to do these things here in our country rather than have to bring everything over from elsewhere.
Well, the thing that we're bringing in, I'm not talking about T-shirts from a low-wage country, like the chicken processing equipment coming in from Holland. That's a high-wage country. Mm-hmm. Also, the most state-of-the-art electronic chip-making machine is from Holland. the machine that makes the fabric for the N95 mask comes from Europe. Now, this goes back to they have kept their shop classes. They have kept the tech route. They don't stick their nose up at it. No, right. We're paying a price for taking out shop classes and totally sort of saying, well, every kid has to go to college. Because I know people that have corporate jets that they're all in what I call the clever engineering department. They're my kind of mind. One was dirt poor, started out washing equipment at a food processing plant. Then he started making it. Wow. Now he has this factory and a jet. I can't go into any more detail because they're not declared. But this is one of the things that makes me want to pull out my hair as I go back and forth between the worlds. And then I go in a plant and I needed to have a little thing made just recently. I don't think the plant knows how to do it. And the thing is they shop it out. They're going to be a shop there to do it because right. The little shops are not forming. Because I'll tell you where the kids are. They're playing video games in the basement. And it's been some successful weaning off of video games with car mechanics. You know, this fits in with the visual thinker. And they find that car mechanics is more interesting than video games. But somebody has to introduce that. You see, if they had it in high school, they'd be out fixing cars or designing racing cars or something like that. That's clever engineering department. And we need these people to keep power plants operating and all this infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So you need both kinds of engineering. But I'll tell you right now, don't take a degree engineer right out of college and put him in charge of concrete construction. He will get ripped off.
Oh.
Yeah, been there, seen that. Sloppy, horrible concrete work, seen that.
Yeah. So we have kind of touched on what I'm going to have you be succinct about here in a second. You have 7 rules for maximizing the likelihood of successful integration of children with ASD into functioning adults.
Okay.
And I think we have already described a little bit of several of these. Follow your passion and learn everything you can about it.
Yep.
So
you also need to broaden those passions. Like when I was a little kid, I would just draw the same horse head over and overhead. Broaden it. You need to broaden. So the kid likes Corvettes or, that's an old fashioned sports car, but whatever it is, take that interest and broaden it so it's not so fixated. The other big problem I'm seeing is kids are not learning working skills. That needs to start with chores for young kids. I know the paper routes are gone. So then we got to find other substitutes for that, like maybe church volunteer jobs, farmer's market, helping out in an old folks home, instant and legal, getting real jobs and learning working skills. Now, where a diagnosis can be helpful for an older adult on the spectrum is with relationships. I've had wives come up to me and say, well, your book, Thinking in Pictures, saved our marriage because now I understand my engineer husband. I've had several of those. Because what I'm very logical.
Right.
I make decisions based on logic. Okay, so how did I not freak out during COVID? Well, I learned everything about it. Everything. Deep in the scientific literature. I'd spend hours online looking that stuff up. Not the rubbish most people look up. I was on Google Scholar. I was on the PubMed database.
Right. So we have this from Tommy Hagen. The concept of different, not less, is so universal for children and adults with and without neurodiversity from various backgrounds and has a profound impact on how I teach my children and interact with those in my community. Thank you for all your contributions, Dr. Grandin.
Well, thank you very much, Tommy. I really appreciate that because I think the most important thing is helping the kids that are different. And we need these kids that are different. I got back out into the plants again and I went down in their shops, not happy what I've been seeing, because I don't think they know how to build the stuff anymore.
Yeah, probably not.
That is a worry. And you've got a few places where that's not true. I mean, one of the Mennonite communities, they've got a business going now making portable concert stages. But you see those individuals grew up using tools. There's a shop in Nebraska that's made some nice packaging equipment. They came off the farm. So you still have some pockets of places where small shops are forming.
Right.
But I'm really concerned. You get in certain parts of the country and I'm going, show me some stuff made in this shop.
And I think here in the Midwest, we do a little bit better job. Than, because we are, more of a farming and rural areas. And, you know, we do still see a lot of kids learning different trades. Now, it's still promoted heavily to go to college, but there are more and more people, and we still have shop and we have ag classes.
Well, you still have your welding and you have that in your FFA, and you need to make sure that you keep those classes, because I got interested in the cattle industry because I got exposed to it as a teenager. I did not come from a livestock background.
Right.
And what I'm finding on careers, there's two big factors here: exposure first and then mentoring. And one of my mentors was a contractor named Jim, and he seeked me out to, because he'd seen my drawings. Exposure and then mentoring. That's a common thing that I see. And then a lot of these kids, I've had parents say, well, they got him out on a working for an office supply store or whatever. And they said, well, he just blossomed. You see, an autistic mind is a bottom-up thinker. You got to fill that database up. You got to fill it up with lots of experiences. Then the person is able to search the database to see how an experience they have now relates to experience they had in the past, can give them information on this experience in the future. It's bottom-up thinking, not top-down.
Yeah, and that's very counterintuitive, I think.
Yeah, it's bottom-up. You take information, you put it in categories. Let's go back to the 10 producers and the 7 trucking companies. Well, I could categorize them by into long, medium, and short distance drives. Okay, that'd be one way I could categorize them. And then I go, okay, now I got this much space in the plant yard. Now, maybe I could swap the time in a couple of these and make a big improvement. Really, something really simple, like just take 2 deliveries and just swap their arrival times.
Right.
So that, but this girl that got this shoved, now her boss had quit, and now she was stuck with these, dealing with these trucks and didn't know what to do.
Right.
And to me, that was just so simple, because I see it.
Right.
I see, we're going to load cattle at 2:00 in the morning. I don't want to do that. Let's just load them at 5 in the morning. I'd rather get up at 5 and load them, and then they come in late.
Yeah. And appreciating those differences in the way of thinking, because I, like you said, we need all the different thinkers.
We need all the different
thinkers. Because we're not going to move forward if we only have one kind.
On this new book, which unfortunately is going to have to wait till October to come out due to supply chain issues.
Right.
Betsy's a total verbal thinker. We're working together as a really good team. And by the way, it's pre-orders on Amazon right now. Working by Temple Grandin. But I would have all these ideas and would write initial drafts, and then Betsy would reorganize everything in the most wonderful way. I go, Betsy, you're just a magician. But you see, one of the things we learned how our minds are complementary, and we would have discussions about this. Then when I went back, and I've actually got it written up in here about who does the engineering, like in a big beef plant. And I found that pattern was the same in every single one of them. I don't care if it's beef, pork, poultry, it doesn't matter what it is.
Right.
You've got the clever engineering department that makes mechanically clever equipment. And then you have the stuff where you need mathematics for, like refrigeration systems, boilers, power, water requirements, make sure the roof doesn't collapse. You see, you really do need all the different kinds of minds.
Yeah. And what you said about Betsy being a magician, that's kind of how I feel about you, is because you have this different, very different ability than I do. And Betsy has a very different ability than you do. So we have Sarah saying a very important concept in relating to all people is understanding that everyone doesn't think in the same way. A basic idea, but one that is not a universal nugget of knowledge.
Well, that's a really good thing to say. But the first thing I get asked in corporations when I talk about different kinds of minds, what's the first thing you have to do? The first thing you have to do is realize that different kinds of thinking exist. And I didn't know that until I was in my late 30s.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know that. You know how I found out, and it was kind of a shocker to me, that different kinds of thinking exist. Like if you say to me, think about a church steeple, they start coming up like PowerPoint slides. Specific churches. I asked a highly verbal speech therapist, see that right there?
Uh-huh.
Got just 2 little lines like that.
Yeah.
All she got. And I'm going, wow, that was my first inkling that different kinds of minds didn't even existed. And also a lot of people are mixtures of these different kinds of minds. lots of mixtures. But we need, where I'm seeing this big gap now is this, what I call clever engineering department. Now, let me tell you, electronic chip making factory, and one of the reasons why Holland is making the state-of-the-art machine for making electronic chips is, let me tell you, there's plenty of skilled trades in that machine. I've seen pictures of it.
Okay. That makes sense. So some of the other tips, or seven rules, I should say, not tips, is live life, be yourself, but also fit in a little.
That's right. Well, like, for example, really sloppy eating. I had dinner with a student the other night, and she ate like an absolute pig, and I got after her about it. There's no excuse for that. You do have to do some things to fit in.
Right. Develop your talents, which we talked about. Yep. Perfect is not possible. This is Mental Health Awareness Month, and I struggled with perfectionism as a child. And I think that that is such a huge lie that people sort of pull from social media mostly, but even through magazines when I was growing up before social media, because you saw perfection, or at least that's what you thought you were looking at. And so we all tried to emulate that, which what we saw in these magazines or on television or in the movies and now on social media. So for you to have that as one of your seven rules, that perfect.
Well, the problem is you want to do something to a high standard, but a lot of kids are scared to death about making mistakes. And I think some of this gets back to the not doing hands-on things. You do hands-on things. I found out things like when I was a kid, we were making a treehouse and we were going to soften up the lumber by putting it under the sprinkler. That did not make it easier to cut. Okay, but these are things that you learn by doing. And kids aren't doing these. They don't tinker anymore. Mm-hmm. You've got to have something to a high standard. But there's been people on the spectrum that destroyed some really nice work because it wasn't absolutely perfect.
Yeah. We have another comment here. Thank you, Dr. Grandin, for sharing all of your wisdom with regards to relationships, whether humans or cattle, and your insights about different ways of thinking. I have followed you for years since I met you in Eastern Oregon about 20 years ago, and you have been an inspiration for me in my work with people with varying levels of abilities. I am looking forward to your new book.
Well, thank you very, very much. And we need all the different kinds of minds. We need them. We have a lot of problems that we need to solve and not just be talking about things. We need the different minds. Let's go back to my grandfather. He was a mathematically trained traditional MIT engineer. Loved math. The other guy, Haig, came up with these goofy coils, which everybody laughed at. And they tinkered together. But then their invention got stolen. This is where they needed a lawyer. They needed a verbal center to prevent the device from being stolen.
Right, exactly.
So that's an example of needing all the different kinds of minds.
Yeah, and your last two rules for life are work hard and never stop learning. And I think for you, you absolutely exemplify the never stop learning. I mean, one of the reasons we're doing this on a Monday instead of a Tuesday is because you're still teaching. You're still learning along with your students and learning different things. And I hope when I am your age that I am also still so in love with learning that I am still doing such things. I want to ask you one quick question.
Okay, all right.
What do you do in your downtime? What do you do for fun?
Well, when I was a young kid, I would go out and fly my kites. I loved kites. And I spent hours and hours flying kites. Now I'll read Science and Nature. I get a new Science or Nature. I go, oh, that's a really good breakfast reading. Breakfast pleasure reading is Science and Nature. And you always keep learning new things. I've really liked getting back out in the field again. Helping them solve problems. And then the other thing is, when I go back and visit the plants, I'm kind of looking at it differently. How do we help the young people that we need to fix things? Because if we got something wrong with equipment in a meat plant, there's going to be something wrong with equipment in a power plant or a lot of different things.
Right.
And you know, the skill loss thing is something I'm extremely concerned about. And I talk to educators all the time about this. The educators are mostly verbal thinkers. There's a lot of stuff in education where they get off on some new theory and they'll just put it out there and it doesn't work.
Right. Yeah. We recycle a lot in education. We try a system where, oh, this is the newest and greatest and we're going to do this one. And then 20 years later, oh, this is the newest and greatest and we're going to try this. And then 5 years later, oh, this is the newest and greatest and we try this. And a lot of those newest and greatest are just recycled and slightly tweaked from.
Well, that's the thing. They're called a different name. Let me just tell you something interesting I've observed with programs for real little children, like three-year-olds that are not talking like me. I've observed that really good teachers that know how to engage these little three-year-old nonverbal autistic kids do the same things regardless of what the name of the therapy is. Mm-hmm. Good teachers just kind of have this knack of how to engage these kids.
Yeah, I agree.
And we need those good teachers. I had excellent teachers. I had my mother, my speech teacher, my third grade teacher, my high school science teacher. I worked with him for about 5 years, giving me all kinds of interesting science projects to do. And what he did is he got me motivated to study, because now education was a pathway to a goal. Now there was a reason for studying.
And that is so key. My husband is a first year teacher this year, and he's had a couple of students. He teaches high school students, and he's had a couple of them that do not see the purpose for education. They see no value in it whatsoever.
Let's start looking at what they're interested in. Because when becoming a scientist became the goal, then I turned it around. And I went from being a horrible student to a good one really fast. I'm still terrible at algebra, but history and English, I just pulled it up, and that required work.
So we have this last comment, and then I sadly have to let you go. It says, thank you for allowing me to truly see my children for their amazing minds.
Well, thank you very, very much. And I want to help kids grow up and go out and do positive things in the world, but I want to do real things.
Yeah.
Real things that will make a difference. And I've really enjoyed being on the show.
Thank you so very much. You truly have the different, not less thing, as mentioned before, was a huge change, shift in my thinking. And having you on today, I could sit here and talk to you for the whole rest of the day. I very much enjoyed this. And we've got another thank you, Dr. Grandin. Another thank you. Whoops, they're not showing up all of a sudden. You're just so profoundly impactful in so many different aspects of life, with special education, with cattle. I didn't even get to talk to you about the parallels between animal behavior and human behavior, because I'm sure there are many.
One of the main things that helped me is that an animal does not live in a verbal world. It's a sensory-based world. And as a visual thinker, when I first started out with cattle, it was obvious to look at what they were seeing. They can show you the kind of stuff that cattle don't like to see in a handling facility. I got to show you the spider monster right here. That's in a cattle handling facility right there. Spider monster. Now that's from an overhead structure in a cattle handling facility. Now at 10:30 in the morning, that was not there. At 3:30 in the afternoon, these Angus cattle decided they were not going to walk over the spider monster. You see, so there's an example of time of day.
Right. Yep. That's so cool. It's very intriguing. I've always been interested in the mind. And I need to let you go, because I know you are an extremely busy person. And I, again, am so incredibly honored that you came on this show today, that you took your time out for my show, which is just a teeny tiny little show in the grand scheme of things.
But I think it's important. One thing that Zoom is, or StreamYard, these sites have made possible is I've talked to foreign countries I would normally never be able to go to, especially about autism and working with little kids.
Yeah. So keep doing what you're doing. Enjoy, if you ever do officially retire. Happy 75th birthday in August. Have a great summer. I don't know what your plans are, but I'm sure it will be something amazing. I'm trying to share all the thank yous that are coming up.
I really appreciate that very, very much. And Another thing we've got to talk about is getting cattle and crops back together again, and getting cattle on cover crops, grazing, rotating crops. That's something I'm super interested in. We should have talked about that more. We got off on the special ed, and I forgot we've got cattle ranchers and stuff on what, watching the show.
That's all right. Well, I can have you back on again. We can schedule another time. I would be more than excited to be have you back on again sometime. But
But right now, one of my biggest things is helping these kids that are different get up and do something good and real in the world.
yeah, exactly. All right, everybody, make
Okay.
sure that you have liked and subscribed so that you do not miss an episode next week. I have a mother-daughter team, Alicia and Maisie Martin. They will be coming on to talk about all the great things that Maisie has broken through in her limits. Thank you all for joining today. Thank you for all the comments. It's been absolutely wonderful, and we will see you next time.
All right, it's great to be here. So I'm going to go ahead and leave the studio. And thank you for having me.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Keno, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Keno, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Keno is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykeno.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykeno.com, Shelleykeno.com.